supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. Hate crimes are up across the nation since the November presidential election, and the Delaware Valley has seen its share of incidents recently. In Wilmington, a car vandalized on Wednesday with racist and anti-Semitic graffiti has been covered as police investigate the incident as a hate crime. And in Middletown Township, Pennsylvania, a week ago, some parents discovered racist graffiti scrawled across the Herbert Hoover Elementary School and nearby apartments. The graffiti included the use of the N-word, and the parents tried to scrub away some of it. These are just two examples of a larger trend. The nonprofit Peace Center has been following the numbers, and Director Barbara Simmons joins us now for some analysis. Barbara, welcome to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you, and thanks for covering this disturbing trend.
Let's talk about the numbers. Locally, they are way up.
Yes. They started to increase in the fall, but the day after the election was when we really started getting the phone calls. And so normally we might get, you know, one or two phone calls a week about bullying incidences. We were getting a call on a daily basis, and sometimes more than a daily basis, with a story about an incident that had happened to a student or to a parent or to a teacher or a professor. We were taking these calls, but not necessarily tracking them. When an incident happened in January at our local youth field, you know, where kids play soccer and ball, that's when we started to track it.
What is your take as to why we're seeing more of this sort of thing?
We're seeing this sort of thing because we now have an environment where you are lacking the kind of leadership that would say white supremacy is not tolerated in our nation. We have a nation in which a campaign was run on anti-immigration. I think it really exploded when we started to see things happening in Charlottesville, Virginia. But prior to that, the rhetoric was not as blatant, or the words being used by our president was not as blatant as it became after Charlottesville, Virginia. We're seeing where white supremacists, white nationalists have felt emboldened.
The right to free speech is inherent to being an American, but what are the parameters in your mind when it comes to hateful speech?
Of course, the right to free speech is what makes this country great. However, when you start targeting a cultural group of people because of their ethnicity or their religion or their race, that is when you've gone overboard. You've crossed that line now into a dangerous zone. There's something called a pyramid of hate that the Anti-Defamation League has created. And at the bottom of that pyramid are microaggressions, racist jokes, little incidences, being teased for your ethnicity. If they're not interrupted, the next level then is much more aggressive racism. And then the next level from that is when it becomes violent. We are at that level right now. It has become violent.
What would the Peace Center recommend that the individual person, any of us who might be listening to this interview, can do to recognize prejudices that might lie within ourselves and take action to correct that?
We all have biases, but we have implicit bias, so we might not even be aware of it. These little microaggressions, how are we recognizing how people of color are being treated differently from the way we are? Are we able to see the kinds of biases we may have? If we see a stereotype being played out, we need to be able to recognize, have we been part of that stereotype or promoting that kind of stereotype? So I think that we have to be more aware of our own biases, our own prejudices. They're there. But we have to move past them and get to know people who are different from ourselves. Have them over for dinner, strike up a conversation, take a walk with them, become an ally for people who right now are being targeted. because of the color of their skin.
Barbara Simmons, thank you so much for joining us for Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you so much.
Barbara Simmons is director of the Peace Center in Middletown Township. Recently fired New Jersey Transit Compliance Officer tells lawmakers he was terminated for raising safety and other concerns and that the agency is, in his words, a runaway train. Todd Beretta told a joint New Jersey Assembly and Senate committee today he cataloged what he said were the agency's inadequate staffing levels, failures to update outdated policies, and testing practices that included giving workers the answers. He says he was told not to write any of his concerns down in memos since they could be turned over to the public. Responding to a lawmaker's question about whether the public should feel safe to travel on New Jersey Transit, Beretta said the systems running the trains are antiquated.
While it's nice to think that they're fail-safe, I also know that there's nobody on watch as backup. I would prefer not to ride the system. I would prefer not to put my son on the system.
Beretta says Executive Director Steve Santoro told him, "We don't need a gotcha guy." Santoro responded after the hearing that he never said that to Beretta. Climate change is changing our food. A number of reports, including the recently released Federal Assessment of Climate Science, say there will be winners and losers when it comes to farming. Production of some crops will increase and others will decline or need to switch locations. Allegheny Front's Julie Grant looks at what this might mean for food produced in our region.
Farmer Matt Herbruck is glad he doesn't have to focus his vegetable crop on peppers again this year. In 2016, the weather was so hot and dry.
Sometime in June, I could clearly see that this was going to be one brutal summer.
He says temperatures were 5 to 10 degrees above average, and instead of the usual 12 inches of rain from May through August, they got only 2 inches all summer. It wasn't enough water to grow lettuce and leafy greens.
So we went big into peppers and eggplants and things like that. Unfortunately, peppers are really not the most lucrative crop, but we had a lot of them, so that was nice.
Herbrick has seen this trend of hot and dry weather, so a few years ago he added an irrigation system. But still, it wasn't enough.
Last year, it was so dry that the spring went dry. And so we didn't have any irrigation after about July. And so my yields were down by half or so last year. Yes, really terrible year.
For a small organic farmer, that's tough to overcome. After 22 years of farming, Herbrook says it's undeniable. The climate is changing, and it's getting more extreme.
It's not unusual at all in this area to go from in the 40s one night to 90 36 hours later. It happens. And that's not normal. The weather is crazy. And, sure, I get it that weather changes, and it's variable, but not to that extreme.
I hear a lot about that from our farmers.
That's Franklin Egan, Director of Education at PASA, the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture. And he says it's more than just talk. He points to data from the USDA that show while the amount of annual rainfall in Pennsylvania and the Northeast U.S. has increased only slightly in the past 50 years, the way it's coming down has changed.
We've been getting a lot more extreme rainfall events.
More than an inch of rain in a day is considered extreme.
The amount of extreme rainfall we've gotten has increased fully 71%.
It's a startling number and a far bigger change than in any other part of the country.
And so if you put that together, about the same annual rainfall, but more intense rainfall, that means that Pennsylvania farmers are dealing with this paradox of way too much water at certain points of the year, punctuated by short but often fairly intense drought periods.
And both extreme wet and dry weather can make farming less reliable. And yet, Pennsylvania's Agriculture Secretary, Russell Redding, says climate change isn't all bad for farms in the region.
I would say at this point that it is a mixed bag.
According to Pennsylvania's climate assessment, last updated in 2015, average annual temperatures have risen almost 2 degrees Fahrenheit over the last 100 years, and they're expected to warm another 5 degrees or more within the next 50 years. Those extreme rain events will get worse, and summer heat waves will get more frequent and intense, so places like Harrisburg would feel more like Birmingham, Alabama. But whether that's good or bad largely depends on what a farm produces. Dairy, poultry and eggs, corn, vegetables, nuts and fruits are all produced in Pennsylvania.
There are going to be winners in this conversation in terms of their ability to grow extended season and different crops. And there'll be a downside because there's a lot of production agriculture that will not be able to tolerate the continued swings of rainfall and temperatures.
One example of that mixed bag, fruit. On the upside, Redding says, as the climate warms, new varieties of fruit are already being grown here.
There are peaches that are here today, experimentally, that are doing very, very well, that would have been a southern peach, meaning Virginia and further south, that are here today. We have apple varieties that would have been in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia that are now in Pennsylvania. So they're real.
Redding says improved farming practices could also be driving the success of these new varieties. On the downside, the warming conditions are implicated in new unwanted pests. The Agriculture Department recently issued a quarantine in 6 counties to prevent the spread of the spotted lanternfly, a black, red, and white insect that first appeared in Pennsylvania and the U.S. just a few years ago. It could devastate the state's tree fruits and grapevines.
That becomes a major concern for us.
And the plant lanternflies need to complete their life cycle? It's another aggressive invasive that likes warmer temperatures, a tree called Tree of Heaven.
Is there a correlation between warmer temperatures and spotted lanternfly and Tree of Heaven? Yes, that's happening.
For many farmers, these unanticipated changes and all the variability mean they have to continually adjust their plans to suit the warming weather. Dairies are adding air conditioning to keep cows cool enough to produce milk. In fields, more are adding irrigation systems for dry periods, and more crops are being grown in hoop houses for better protection from weather and pests. Vegetable farmer Matt Herbrick says for years now he's been shifting away from working the fields in July.
I just can't. Stuff doesn't grow that well, and also I'm not going out there and it's 95 degrees. And who wants to do that?
But he also sees some benefits of climate change. Nowadays, October is still usually warm enough for planting, so he's still selling produce in November and December. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
During a rally in Phoenix earlier this week, President Trump told supporters it's time to expose the crooked media deceptions and to challenge the media for their role in fomenting divisions. And yes, by the way, they're trying to take away our history and our heritage. It played well to those who attended the rally, but Newsworks Tonight's Dave Heller spoke to Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll, for some insight on the public's attitude overall toward the media.
Frank, President Trump has been trying to erode confidence in the media for quite a while now. Has he been succeeding?
Well, he's certainly playing to an audience when you talk about Republicans who are receptive to that message. It is amazing, 62% of Democrats, I say amazing, it's a pollster who looks at numbers all the time, but listen to this, 62% of Democrats say that news organizations generally get the facts straight, as opposed to the alternative we gave them, which was that their news reports are often inaccurate. Republicans, it is 14% who say that news organizations generally get the facts straight. So that's a huge, almost 50% gap between Republicans and Democrats in the way that they look at the accuracy of the media. Trump is clearly playing to his base of Republicans, but not, repeat, not playing to other Americans when he derides the media to the extent that he has.
How have those numbers changed, say, compared to previous administrations?
Well, they've changed a lot. We measured this back in 2003, which is a nice comparison point, and there wasn't much difference at all back then. It was 35% of Republicans who said the media was accurate and 41% of Democrats. Now, mind you, those aren't great numbers. But for our point here, there was very little difference between the two.
Let's move on from confidence in the media to confidence in our education system and specifically charter schools.
55% of Americans say that charter schools provide a positive educational experience for their students, and that's actually pretty good. The highest of the 5 different types of schooling that we tested were private schools, which was 71%, getting an excellent rating from the public. 63% gave an excellent rating to parochial schools, and then 55% to charter. Now, below the 50% mark was homeschooling at 46, and then public schools came in last. 44% of Americans gave a positive mark to public schools.
And again, some context, please. That 44% for public schools, is that an all-time low?
No, it has been low all along, but not necessarily an all-time low. I will say that that is the one type of education where Democrats are more positive than Republicans. Republicans are more positive than Democrats about the education kids receive in private schools, parochial schools, charter schools, which isn't a surprise, and homeschooling. But Democrats flip around, and they're more positive when we ask about public schools than are Republicans. So again, a partisan divide in how Americans look at schools.
Frank, regardless of political stripe, all Americans root for the little guy, the underdog, and I suspect that also translates into favoring small over big business.
Yeah, it does, and this really hasn't changed. It comes up because every summer we ask Americans about their confidence in a variety of institutions in America, and we include in that big business and small business, and those two adjectives make a huge difference. 70% or more of Americans say they're confident in small business. The percent who are confident in big business down in the 20% range. So there's huge difference just because we say small versus big. And it's been that way for quite a while. The dilemma, of course, for American enterprise today, Dave, is that there is this pressure towards bigger and bigger business. You know, CEOs want to merge. They want to acquire. They want to grow. They have stockholder and investor pressure to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And yet at that same time, Americans are saying we like small.
Also a dilemma for the same consumers who would shop at, say, Walmart or online at Amazon.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot. Clearly, attitudes favoring small business don't necessarily dictate behavior. You know, you're in a community where Walmart has come in over the past decades, and clearly you may favor Main Street businesses, but when the prices are cheaper, the selection is bigger out at the big store outside of town. That's where people shop. Same thing for Amazon. So it is a problem for small businesses. They have the hearts of Americans, but they don't necessarily have the behavior of Americans. So it's a challenge for them to try to figure out how to exploit, I would say, the advantage they have, because Americans really do like and root for the underdog in this situation, small businesses.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
An opera based on the 1985 MOVE confrontation will premiere next month. During the confrontation, police dropped a bomb on an African-American activist commune in West Philadelphia, killing eight people. As WHYY's Peter Crimmins tells us, Philadelphia opera singers will perform excerpts of the work at a Baptist church in Jenkintown tomorrow.
The opera is not actually about the MOVE bombing. It has a contemporary setting as a group of runaway teenagers hide out in a building in West Philadelphia where ghosts of the bombing still reside. The music has elements not usually heard in an opera, including R&B, blues, and spoken word poetry. The director is famed choreographer Bill T. Jones, who wants to collapse high and low culture by bringing classical music and street funk into the same place.
What do we mean by funk? Everything from diction, for instance, the way you sing a pop song, and the way theater music has to be sung. They have to get the skills to satisfy the operatic values and at the same time to make us feel like it's spontaneous and it's like something coming from city life. This is difficult.
Jones plans to attend a preview event at the Salem Baptist Church in Jenkintown on Saturday night. He will speak on a panel about the MOVE bombing and the opera, interspersed with performance excerpts. The opera debuts at the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia on September 16th. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
And finally tonight, National Women's Equality Day is tomorrow, marking the 97th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which extended the right to vote to women. At Independence National Historical Park, events will honor women who have led the charge for positive change. Park Ranger Sarah Karpinski says Philadelphia's early path toward progress is linked to many symbols, including the Justice Bell. It is a replica of the Liberty Bell, made in 1915 by Philadelphia suburbanite Catherine Ruschenberger. Karpinski says for years, the bell was paraded through Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to drum up support for suffrage. And then
19th Amendment is finally ratified. Catherine Ruschenberger and the Women's Party bring the Justice Bell to the back of Independence Hall and unchain it. Through this entire process, it had been chained and silenced to represent the silence of women's voices.
The Justice Bell is on permanent display at Valley Forge National Park. A women's group rechained the bell 2 years ago and will unchain it in 2020 on the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment. Tomorrow's activities at Independence National Historical Park include a scavenger hunt and a toast to tenacity at the Visitor Center. And that's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. WHYY's news director is Eugene Son. Our assistant news director is Katie Colinari. John Musoni is assistant vice president for news operations. Our engineers this week were Bob Alls and Adam Staniszewski. Sandra Clark is vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan for Newsworks Tonight.